Now then, Dimitri, you know how we've always talked about the possibility of something going wrong with the bomb. The bomb, Dimitri. The hydrogen bomb. Well, now, what happened is one of our base commanders, he had a sort of, well, he went a little funny in the head. You know, just a little funny. And he went and did a silly thing. Well, I'll tell you what he did. He ordered his planes to attack your country. Well, let me finish, Dimitri. Let me finish, Dimitri. Well, listen, how do you think I feel about it? Can you imagine how I feel about it, Dimitri? Why do you think I'm calling you? Just to say hello? Of course I like to speak to you. Of course I like to say hello. Not now, but anytime, Dimitri. I'm just calling up to tell you something terrible has happened. It's a friendly call. Of course it's a friendly call. Listen, if it wasn't friendly, you probably wouldn't have even got it.
Welcome to Stuff We've Seen. This is Jim, and with me is Teal. A little bit of a different show for you. We had a little bit of a moment. We didn't think we'd be taping for a week, but we're on the mic. We're kind of doing a different format, so you may hear some noise in the background. It's just like I said, it's a little bit of a different process, but we wanted to come together to discuss kind of like what's been happening on social media these days. Movies. Well, movies, for some reason, are now like the hot topic. And I'm actually in a weird way excited about it because, you know, good movies are not being seen in the theaters like they were. You know, if it's not a Marvel film or a Disney movie of any sort, and to have people debating, talking, loving or hating certain movies that are now dropping on Netflix, and they're taking to Twitter, they're taking to Facebook and other things. To me, that's exciting just because, wow, people are talking about movies.
And I think, you know, there might be a couple reasons for that. One is people are tired of talking about politics and
so they thought they should fight about movies instead.
So, well, yeah, in a way, you know, it's a little like you have a little bit less invested in the outcome. But you're right about this Netflix thing. I have seen so much conversation about The Irishman that I don't think I would have seen if the movie had been released in sort of the standard way, which would be like 2 weeks in December for awards, and then I don't know. I mean, would The Irishman have become as big, because it's big now, everyone's watching it, everyone's talking about it, would it have become as big if it wasn't on Netflix? And the answer is no. Everyone gets to see it now around the same time.
Yeah, and plus it's like for 3.5 hours, there aren't people who weren't going to flock to the theater to see a 3.5 hour movie, even if it was in the old days where it wasn't going to be on cable for 6 months.
Yes. Well, and I saw a post, a friend on Facebook posted the other day where he said, okay, I finished my third viewing of The Irishman, and it's even better than I thought it was the first two times. And then, you know, he went into detail about some really interesting, subtle things that I hadn't picked up on, that he picked up on second and third viewing.
Well, I've seen it now twice. Well, my wife and I finished watching it, and so I watched it obviously in the theater for the whole time, and I'm really glad I had that experience because it really didn't feel like 3.5 hours. But then I broke it up into three different parts on the next viewing, and like one was like an hour, then like an hour and 10 minutes, and then the final hour and 20.
Right.
And it felt like a 10-hour movie because of all the time in between.
Right.
But you get so much more of the details, and also you have time to go on the internet and look up the real story, and then you like right. go back and appreciate all of the very, very specific details of the story that Scorsese put in there, including, you know, the whole Jimmy Hoffa finale, let's say, like little details that right. you're wondering about, like the fish in the back. There's this whole thing. I was shocked.
Oh, yes, yes.
I was fish. Shocked at how much of the details.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, the fish. I had forgotten about. Yeah, and it's such a rich movie with so much detail and so much subtlety in the performances. And yeah, really, it's. But I'm glad that people are watching it multiple times. And that wouldn't happen if it had been released in a normal kind of prestige picture way.
No. So, I mean, you know, I'm a little bit torn, right? Because I love the cinema experience. And I hate that, you know, that a success will kind of lead to more of this. And I think that we also see on the downside of Netflix, they release a lot of supposed original content throughout the year. And I would say, let's say out of 10 movies, two of them are good. And eight of them are not worth watching. So,
and some of them are beyond not worth watching. Like,
right. Oh, yeah, right. They're worse than like those rent to VHS movies that
exactly.
Well, I used to yes. call them direct to video is what I used to call them.
Yeah, yeah, that's what they were. They were yeah. direct to video, and some of this, and I guess that's kind of what a Netflix movie is these days, is direct to video. Except for these prestige pictures they're doing. But, you know, how many Velvet Buzzsaw? Oh, man, I'm still angry about that.
Well,
still...
you watch it and you realize, oh, the reason why it showed up on Netflix is because there's no way anybody would have seen that thing in the theater and paid money. It was terrible. Exactly.
It was so awful. Yeah. And so I don't know if Netflix originally financed that or if they bought it. I know they did.
I think they bought it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know they financed The Irishman, so that was,
yes.
And they financed Roma.
It was, and that's the thing is, so it's like almost like you need a little tag, like a Netflix financed film versus
right.
and, something and, they picked yeah. off the scrap heap. But you know, the Netflix, now it's something I'm going to look forward to the end of the year. What is Netflix going to give me? They're now building yeah. that in because, hey, even when I lived in Boston for many years,
yeah,
they were a big market, so they got pretty much everything, but
yeah.
they didn't get it always right away. So like you said, Irishman, New York and L.A. would have it
right, right.
Those 2 weeks in November, and I'd be salivating going, when's it going to come into Boston? It would be like that first or second week in January and have
right.
to wait.
And, well, and sometimes these movies would come out in that two-week window in New York and L.A., and they wouldn't hit with critics.
Oh, right. Yeah, right. They, you know, that's the thing is there was these year-end crop of movies and
yeah.
you had like 20 of them and,
yeah.
You know, a good half of them would turn out to – there would be always good movies, but they were duds. They were not going to be the Oscar-worthy
exactly.
films.
And so they might still be good movies. They're just drowned out by the other stuff and then they don't get the wide release at all.
Well, so now with the dynamics changing and this I always like is – the award season used to stretch on forever, and the Oscars wouldn't even be announced till like mid-February, and then at
right.
the end of March was when they would actually be it. And now you're like, you know, a quarter of the way through the next year. Well, this year, earlier than ever, it's mid-January they're announcing.
Right.
And then at the end or mid-February is when the awards are going to happen. So in order to do that, pretty much everything that you're going to want to see is either have been out or is going to come out in
yeah.
the next, you know, week or so. So you have a good shot at seeing most of these things, except for, again, those small films like an Uncut Gems. I really want to see
right.
that. And I don't know if that's going to make it to my theater because my theater is
so
a joke.
Here's one thing that's happened in terms of the Oscar nomination process over the last 10 to 15 years is they used to have to go to the theater and see the movie. Then they started sending out videotapes. Then they started sending out DVDs. Now they send out codes, and you go to a certain website and put in the code, and you can watch the movie. This is for Academy members.
Yes, I know that.
And yeah, so it makes it much easier for Academy members to see those films before, much earlier than they would have otherwise. They're not waiting through January to see those films.
So that's all interesting, but I think one of the reasons why we wanted to come together because we probably wouldn't be taping until maybe late next week at best. Right. And then by then, you know, there'll be some new controversy that we'll have to talk about is one of the things that there's been a lot of noise this weekend on social media was Marriage Story.
I didn't catch any of the social media noise.
You'll stop. Have to film. You're lying.
No, I'm not.
You're lying.
Okay, I saw one post about it.
You're absolutely lying. I don't believe it. All right. Well, I'm gonna fill you in on the controversy.
I'm not lying. Right. I'm not aware of the controversy.
So I've been waiting to see this movie, Noah Baumbach. I've been reading a lot of great reviews about it. It's supposed to be great, you know, entertainment, great performances, blah, 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 blah. And it came out on Friday on Netflix. It had been shown up in a few theaters. I know that they, Netflix actually, and I think that's kind of cool, is the Paris Theater, which had shuttered over the summer, they have taken it over as sort of a residency, and they're going to be showing their movies at the Paris. That kind of solves one of the problems about not getting things booked. It's like, hey, if we run the theater, right, we can put our movies in, and then that gives it a New York release, and then they get something in LA and anybody else that wants it. But I think that's kind of unique. So anyways, it came out and I really wanted to see it. So I watched it on Friday night with my wife. And, you know, I've never been through a divorce, but I was through a pretty big breakup. And so I could relate to some of it, but I related to things differently because I have kids. And
you haven't been through the lawyer bit.
I haven't been through the lawyer bit, but I mean, I watched it and I'd heard a little bit of like what some of the scuttlebutt had been, right? Some of the critics felt that Noah Baumbach may have leaned too sympathetically on Adam Driver's character. And so,
interesting. Okay.
So I watched it just, you know, there, and I didn't have that same takeaway, but I mean, I was really just devastated by the performances. Like I found like even like in more intense and knots in my stomach in times than a horror movie. That's how intense it was. And I found at times I was so riveted by the performances on screen that I find myself not even blinking. Like I just was so absorbed.
Wow. Okay.
And I really liked the cinematography.
Cinematography was great. Yeah.
You know, it's like shot on film and instantly, you know, it has a look. It's like, it's just funny because it's, you know, it's standard setups, or it seems to be, right? That it could have easily just been, you know, shot on digital video, what have you.
Right, right.
But the cinematographer who also shot The Favorite, and it's not shot with all those big widescreen
fisheye lenses. Those wide angle fisheye, the Yorgos' fisheye, yeah.
But it kind of reminds me of the way like Woody Allen didn't himself have really any sense of like where screen direction goes, but he knew enough to hire always like top-notch cinematographers because he knew it was important and he wanted to put the trust in them. And I feel like Noah Baumbach also says, I really need the cinematographer here to do a job so that I can work on the performances.
Right.
So I really liked it, and I was even taken away because I don't usually write anything, say even on Facebook, because I know what happens is any movie that I actually like enough to write, it's a weird phenomenon. Nobody, if you write and say, oh, a movie sucked or whatever, nobody pays attention. But as soon as there's a movie that might be better than a crappy movie and you write you like, you're just asking for trouble. Someone's going to be out there and says, oh, or they just maybe like, oh, wow, he really liked it. So they're instantly going in and they can't wait to tear it down. And then you and I know a guy who I think he watched the whole thing. And
he did.
For some strange reason. And I know he's a little bit of a jokester, but he found this.
By jokester, you mean troll, I think.
Yeah, he's a little bit of a troll. But he found this need to like, and I think there's always truth in the trolling, that he really loved The Irishman. And it is a fantastic movie. And I'm not saying that I liked Marriage Story more than I liked The Irishman. It's just, to me,
you can't really compare them.
Well, they're comparable in the fact that they both dropped on Netflix in the past month. That's about
right.
It. So it's weird that he seems to like not like this Marriage Story by virtue of the fact that it can be nowhere near as good as The Irishman. But if he was alone in that kind of weird comparisons, then I think it's just, you know, this guy being a kind of a little troll. But yet other people seem to be really hung up in wanting to tear this movie down. And I actually think that what's going on is that the movie is uncomfortable for a lot of people. because if you've been in a relationship at any time, right. and that it's hard to watch a movie like this and wrestle with it because it sometimes cuts close to the bone in a relationship, and it does make you go through what side are you on or there or trying to examine. Sure. And when a movie actually makes you start to look outside it and start to break down these things or look for its flaws, I'm thinking – This is something going on. So I really liked it, and I think you watched it and watched the whole movie, but I'm not sure.
I watched the whole movie.
You did watch it.
I watched the entire movie. Yeah. All right.
First question.
Yeah.
Did you watch it on one of your tiny little screens, or did you watch it on your big projector?
Watched it on the big screen.
Okay. Watched it by yourself?
By myself. Yeah.
Okay. But you watch it in somewhat installments, right?
I watched the first 10 minutes one night.
Oh, okay. And then you watched the rest.
And then the next night I started over.
Okay.
And watched the first 10 minutes again and watched the whole thing all the way through. Now, yeah, I watched it through in one sitting.
Now, I probably suspect, just knowing you and your cynical ways, I do not know what you thought of the film. I knew nothing. I knew zero, which is why I wanted to get on here before I ended up finding out anything. But I will preface this for any listener out there that they should know going in that Teal is a noted, and I don't know the reasons why, but he's a noted Adam Driver hater. He hates Adam Driver.
I hate Adam Driver.
He's the anti Jake Gyllenhaal in Teal's book.
Yes. I mean, aren't there some actors that just bug you?
Not like this, but you, I feel like, haven't seen any of his really good performances. I feel like you just avoided him because you don't like him, but you haven't seen a lot of the good things he's been in.
I'm not saying he's a bad actor. In fact, I think his performance in this movie is great. I just don't like it. It's a totally personal thing, and so I'm willing to put that aside in the interest of evaluating this movie, because I realize that's just my own personal bias, that to me, he's like fingernails on a chalkboard.
But see, that can also, though, if you hate that guy so much, it can affect how you view a film like this, right?
It can, but and this is why I went back and watched the first 10 minutes again. It's because that first 10 minutes I was getting that like, I don't like Adam Driver. So I started over so I could try to put that aside.
Well, I feel like the beginning, it's a little bit of a fake out.
It is.
It sets me up for one thing and immediately like pulls it back a little bit because, again, I didn't know any of the details of the movie. So
me neither. I knew nothing.
Going in, I was under the assumption that we were going to see a film about a family and you watch them grow apart and then you watch them get divorced. But I guess credit already to this film is that it gave me something I haven't really seen before where it wasn't going – we start with a separation has already occurred.
Exactly.
So I was fascinated by what I got, but now I want to just, before we get into it, I really want to hear what your thoughts were on the film.
Okay. So my thoughts are complicated.
And that's okay.
Yeah. So I'm not saying I liked it or didn't like it, because there were things I liked about it and things that didn't work as well for me.
Okay.
And so I think... I mean, it's all there. The cinematography is great. The acting is great. I had a few issues with the script, and I'll point out one scene in which I felt like the script failed me.
Okay.
It's when Scarlett Johansson first goes to see the lawyer.
Okay.
And Laura Dern's performance in this movie is fantastic. I thought she was great. However, I felt her performance was also a little bit comedic. Which is maybe not a bad thing. I think there is some comedy in this movie. But in this scene, she says to Scarlett Johansson, "Tell me your story." And Scarlett Johansson goes into a monologue that to me felt really scripted. It felt to me like she was acting out a performance of a script, and it didn't feel like it was coming from her. It didn't feel anchored in the character in the same way I wanted it to be. And so it created a little distance for me, where it felt really written. It was like, it was too articulate and too well thought through for her emotional state in that moment. Later on in the movie, there's a scene where the two of them have a fight, and I felt the exact opposite on that scene. That scene felt sloppy and like they were figuring it out as they went along, and so there were a few scenes where I felt like it was scripted, and then something else happened to me in this movie.
Okay.
So
Well, can we go back to that scene for a second?
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, there's the part of me who had thoughts of it while I was watching the movie, but then also the discussion with my wife after and some of her different perspective being a woman and me reviewing in my mind a scene. Yeah. It's funny you brought up that exact scene because, you know, I've actually – my thoughts on Laura Dern's performance are a little complicated on that. And maybe because I've seen her in Big Little Lies, so I've seen her play a character that reminded me of that a little bit.
Okay.
But what was interesting, and you talked about the rehearsal, but see, I think that's what actually was brilliant about what we were seeing there is that Scarlett Johansson – well, she was an actress. Yeah. And she's been rehearsing this in her brain. She's been waiting for somebody to sit her down and actually say, I want to hear your story. Because see, that's the part where we don't know. We assume that we know what their relationship was like. But see, Adam Driver's character thought he knew. And he really, it was all about the world he created and it was a happy one. And for her, it wasn't. And so, you know, we see this, a lot of anger out of her. We see her act in a way that at first it seems like very selfish. She's lawyered up with a very you know, tiger. But what really seems to be going on, because Laura Dern wanted to get her story to hear her, is that Scarlett Johansson, she knows that she doesn't have the ability to be a tiger and a shark.
Right.
And she needs somebody because she doesn't want – she wants to live in L.A., but she knows that if she did it the amicable way, she would give in on everything. And so she knows enough that she doesn't have the strength, and it's almost that she regrets that she's going to have to do this, but there's no other way that she's ever going to be able to get through this if she doesn't have somebody who's pretty vicious on her side.
Yeah, and I agree with everything you're saying. It's just a matter for me, and this is, again, why I'm not really critical of the film, because I feel like it's doing a lot right. It just didn't emotionally engage me on you talk about it being kind of devastating and your heart's pounding and stuff. It didn't do that to me. And I think part of the reason is there was something about their relationship that I never totally bought into. I understood it, but I didn't quite see it just wasn't as heart-wrenching for me. I think another part of the reason is that I did start to find some things in the movie comedic. And I thought Laura Dern was comedic. I thought Ray Liotta was comedic. I thought Alan Alda was comedic. And at some point, something I wasn't expecting about this movie is I was expecting it to be two people, you know, a relationship falling apart between two people. I didn't expect the lawyers. And I didn't expect the level of, it almost turns into a procedural at some point. And it does. Like, it's a legal procedural. Like, there's a chess game going on with the divorce. And I really liked that stuff, actually. I thought that was great and really interesting. But it also seemed funny to me. And so,
well, you know Noah Baumbach's work, right? I mean, this guy always has humor in it, like the squid and the whale. And
yes. So I guess, I almost feel like I need to watch the movie again, because by the end of it, I wasn't crying. I was laughing.
Well, I was never crying in the movie.
Well, okay. But I wasn't going through a heart-wrenching emotion. I was actually just laughing. I actually laughed out loud several times in the last 45 minutes of this movie because, to some extent, again, this is a failing of the script for me, is I feel like they were just lining up a series of cliches. And
I guess we're going to get into a disagreement here. I didn't see that at all. But I mean, again, you see, you sound like you had a whole bunch of expectations for what this movie was supposed to be, where I actually went in cold knowing, well, something about divorce, but I really didn't know much about – I knew there were some actors in it. I didn't know exactly the roles they played. And when I talk about it being devastating to me, here's what I mean by that is that the process of divorce
– yes.
In that this was a couple that, you know, were splitting up. And sure, obviously things weren't perfect. And he, you know, and again, there was like these little reveals that happened, right? So you know, he'd had a small affair and other things. And then there's some quibbles about exactly that. But I mean, there's a lot of things going on in this relationship. We are only given the aftermath and they're reflecting. And so we have to like, you know, we can't see, well, what brought them together. Right. And I didn't really like the kid actor. He was annoying to me. So it's all like, oh, they had this kid that I can't stand. But what was devastating, it's that process of, wow, in order for them to come apart legally, they have to almost tear apart something that was great in their relationship.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's the devastating part to me. And the part that really works, I mean, sure, there's laughs along the way in this movie.
Yeah.
But Alan Alda's character, to me, is the key. He's actually, to me, he's like right out of Heller's Catch-22.
Yeah, I can see that.
He
yeah.
feels like this character that he's there to remind that, like, this, the divorce is a horrible thing. It may be necessary, but it's horrible. I'm going to see if I can't make this process as easy because guess what? And he points out all the catch-22s
right.
that Adam Driver can't comprehend. He
can't
comprehend it because he never thought of himself as ever getting divorced, right?
Or having to go – I mean, he's the one at the very beginning who says, let's not bring in lawyers. Let's just do this,
well, that's
this
again,
out.
Him, and we didn't realize that at the time, right? But we discovered that's, again, him controlling in a way
yes.
that doesn't seem controlling. It seems very right. nice. Like, hey, I don't want to bring lawyers into this. But
it's actually just him controlling her more. Yeah.
Yeah. But here's what – I mean, again, when I get gut-wrenching is that eventually, right, you get to that point where he's feeling, oh, now I'm feeling screwed and
right.
that I'm being put out and I have to keep coming back here and all this stuff. So what does he do? He decides to get the more expensive lawyer. And then what
yes.
happens? He ends up going almost backwards. But
yeah.
spending more money. And so there's, to me, it's like this, like the experience is such a tragedy, which is why I've come. Because at the end, he ends up having to give in a way that he could never give before.
Yeah, he loses some control.
Yeah. But like all that, so it's like the question is that do you have to pay that financial price, that mental price, to then eventually change and become a different person in a weird way?
Right. Well, I mean, ultimately, I guess that's what the movie is about, is like, how do you resolve this so you can go on with your life? And what's interesting is, and I think this is very accurate, actually, is it's easier for her to go on with her life.
Well, that's what the thing is when you see
because she's the one who makes the decision. So he's blindsided by it in a way.
And I think that's why when some people look and think that it's sympathetic to him is because the journey that we see him is his whole world collapsing and then him having to like kind of come to terms with it.
Yeah.
He has to go through the stages of grief.
Exactly.
She goes through them differently.
So I guess maybe if I'm picking on something in this movie, it's some of the dialogue.
But see, again, this is what's so funny is you're – and that's what I'm finding funny is in a movie like this, you – more than anything is trying to find all of these imperfections in this film
yeah.
as opposed to like it. So it's like there's something about that you don't want to accept this movie. You don't want to let it in. Maybe it brings up stuff for you or something.
It definitely brought up all that stuff. It's not like I was totally cold through the whole movie. I had trouble locating the tone.
I don't know. That cracks me up.
Yeah,
a drama that has some comedy. Who would have thought?
Well, I don't know. I just couldn't quite, because my criticism of the film is entirely personal. It's just that I wanted to, just based on the first 10 minutes, based on the premise of the movie, I wanted to be taken through an emotional journey.
Well, I'm sorry that didn't happen for you.
So I'm not criticizing, it's not a critique of the movie so much, and it's not like I'm trying to pick it apart and find things wrong. It just didn't affect me to the level I was thinking about a movie like Cold War from a year ago, and that really affected me emotionally. And for some reason, this just didn't get its claws into me.
That was a different type of love story. This really isn't a love story.
So,
I think that's the mistake of thinking that it was a love story.
Right. I guess maybe it is. So I started watching another movie last night, which I didn't finish, but I felt like I had to take a look at before we talked about this, Kramer versus Kramer.
That's a dated movie.
It is a dated
movie. I seen it not too long ago, and it's like kind of – and it's not dated in that like, oh, this isn't that good. It's just when you look at the attitudes and the way things were.
The gender roles.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really kind of crazy. But it is an affecting movie to me.
Yeah, but I also think it's unfair to compare these two movies in that they're – like you would think, oh, well, these are two movies about divorce, but I actually felt they're very different.
They're incredibly different. Yeah. I mean, I'm only the reason I did this is because you were complaining about comparing Marriage Story to
Irishman
to the Irishman. So I thought, well, if I'm going to compare it to something, if it's fair to compare it at all, it's fair to compare it to another divorce movie.
I guess. Or I haven't seen Shoot the Moon in, like, you know, ages maybe. But
yeah.
But I feel like it's lumping it in. You know, like with Kramer versus Kramer, a lot of it was this guy having to be in a mom role in a
right.
time when, you know, divorce, men did not get any custody of kids back
right.
then.
And right.
there wasn't even like child care. I mean, that was a whole big part of that movie that's kind of funny now, is that him
yes,
trying
there's
to find,
no child care.
Yeah, finding a kid for that. And then the idea that he like has like, you know, no time to get a job, and he like walks in and he can just get a job like that. Like
right.
that
yeah.
just doesn't happen. But the interesting thing about this film is the relationship that Adam Driver has with his son. And
yes.
when you look at it, is he doesn't actually, when he's in a family structure with his wife, he can come in as he feels like and be the funny guy, be a dad
right.
when he wants to. But to be an actual dad in this movie, he struggles with.
He really struggles with. And those were some good scenes. This movie is filled with good scenes. I don't know really what my complaint is, other than it's a totally personal thing. I could go on about all the great things in this movie and how well so much of it works.
Well, remember, I saw The Irishman, and
yeah.
We talked about it in two different episodes. The first one, you know, you hadn't seen it, and I just basically
right.
said, I need you to see it because I need some
yeah.
help. Because I walked out with some conflicted feelings. It was like,
yeah.
I saw a movie that was really well made, great performances, but I'm not sure that I'm that over the moon about it. And then I saw it a second
yeah.
time, or just thought about it more, and I just realized how great a film it is. I mean, it's just a marvelous achievement. This film, right, hit me with like a thunder.
Yeah.
And I just thought that, again, I like Adam Driver, you know, you don't like this guy, but especially in that fight scene, you know, you wonder, like, how do you get to that place as
yeah.
an actor? Because it's hard to get to that place almost as a real person. Yet I feel like there's been times in, like, you know, having an emotional fight with, like, say, my ex-girlfriend.
Right.
Getting very close to that place. And I just think that the acting on both parts is really, really good.
I totally agree. I think the great, with the possible exception of Ray Liotta.
Well, it's weird to see Ray Liotta. He's just there, but I actually didn't think he was that. I felt that there was the courtroom scene where him and
yeah.
What's her face, Laura Dern, were going at it. I don't know. I've never been in a court like that, but it didn't feel real to me.
That was one of the scenes I started laughing during.
It was funny, but like I said, yeah, I mean, so here's an interesting thing, and this is where I guess the director comes in, and I thought about it in one scene, in that sometimes what we're seeing isn't necessarily like to be taken as real, in the sense that you're seeing it maybe filtered through the absurdity of these.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, here's the scene that made me think about that. The scene where the care worker comes over
mm-hmm.
to Adam Driver's house and observes the kid.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird scene.
It is it's a really weird scene. She's weird.
And she's weird. And I actually, while we were watching it, said to my wife, she's weird. And my take on that scene is that, because, you know, see, Adam Driver is so nervous.
Yeah.
About making the right impression, and that this is all there, and he F's up so badly that I think that the whole scene is not, it's his perspective of what's going on and the weirdness, and who knows what, you know, maybe that little person didn't even look like that.
Oh, okay.
I mean, he, like, at the end of it, he passes out because he cuts himself.
Yeah.
So I feel that it's like, it's so weird because that's probably how he felt, that this person is
right.
some odd person staring at every single thing he does, and that he's making every mistake, and it's so awkward and painful.
So
I'm starting to think that a lot of the things we see are through a certain lens, and not necessarily when you're meeting these lawyers, it's a little
There's a heightened reality to it.
Yeah, not necessarily on the parts with her, but
okay,
with the parts of him.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I feel like some of the stuff with her and Laura Dern is a little hyper real almost, right? Like, and so maybe that's what it was for me with this movie. And you may have just nailed it, is that it's not as realistic as I wanted it to be.
Well, I think that's another decision why he brought the cinematography. And now we're seeing it on film as opposed to the video, which adds almost that element of realness that's kind of cold. And he brings in the warmth, and there's certain framing. And, you know, it's not an easy movie. It's not like Irishman, right? I watched it twice. And if someone said, oh, I really want to watch The Irishman, I'd pop it in and watch it a third time.
Yeah.
Marriage Story is not something I'm going to go back to a bunch of times. And that doesn't mean I didn't love right. it. It just means that it's certain movies you can't just go watching again. But, you know.
So one thing we haven't talked about with this movie, which I think is important to at least mention, is the score.
Uh-oh. Alert. This is the first thing. And this is where I knew that I thought you were ready to just gang up on me and hate it because, see, unfortunately, you had mentioned something about, I don't like this score, even though you heard like just the first 10 minutes of it. And then, like not more than 10 minutes later, I get a Facebook text from your buddy there, and he's like harping on the score in his troll style, and I'm like, see, they just whipped this up, and what he did is he probably reached out to you first and said, oh God, wait till you hear the score, and it put a seed in your head to already not like it. And this is Randy Newman, and I didn't know it was Randy Newman until the end of the movie. I actually liked the score. I thought it was, again, it counterbalances what's actually happening on the screen that might have also off-put you. And aside from all those Pixar movies he did, this guy did Ragtime and he did The Natural, and those are two of my favorite scores. And
me too. I so totally agree.
To you.
It's, again, not calling it a bad score. I'm questioning the fit on certain scenes.
You know what? What's so funny when you came out with that is that, like, that score didn't bother me in the least. I liked it, and I thought it worked the whole time. And the only time I even was, like, questioning it was when you and your troll and troll boy were piping up on it. And it was the first, I was like, oh, and I actually thought, oh, this is a great score. And, of course, yes, it is not again, we can't compare scores between this and the Joker score, which might have been a better score, and I don't even know what, you know, the Academy is going to say. This is what this troll friend of ours was all worried about. And I'm like, what are you're worried about the Academy? They make so many goofy picks. You can't be worried about what they're going to pick for best score.
So for me, my only issue with this score is in certain scenes, it lent to the feeling of unreality for me.
But again, I'm just telling you, maybe this is something that I saw that you didn't. And maybe when you go back, it might fit into my thesis that we're seeing something, you know, subjectively.
Yeah, and I like that idea. I think.
Well, think about the squid and the whale, right? That was an altered perspective in the eyes of the way the kids were seeing their parents.
Yeah.
It wasn't necessarily how they were.
So whose perspective do you think we're in more in Marriage Story? Because you would mention this early on with the controversy.
I think there's a lot more scenes with Adam Driver.
Yeah.
And we're not getting as much of a window into her world. So, I mean, maybe it's scene-wise. We don't know what was cut out or whatever. But the fact is he controlled their entire life until she made a plan to get out of it. And that's when he discovers how much of a plan she put in place. And yeah, you know what? There's a part I'm a little – like you go through a little bit of an anger like, man, you know, she got this lawyer and, you know, she met with all these other ones and she kind of made it hard for him. And she really did all these – like, and you're actually, I think, forcibly being put into that look what she's done until you can unpack it a bit and realize, oh, wait a minute. No, that she had to do this because
Only way she can get control over her own life.
Yeah, and I think you just have to be a more astute enough viewer to pick that up. And then some people are not, and I think that's okay too. Is that this movie is going to? It's obviously bringing out a lot of opinions, and so ultimately, right? Where I have to say beyond that, I really love the movie. Is I have to say this thing is a big success because it's bringing out all of these feelings. I mean, when it was being shown for like critics and stuff and first couple weeks, I guess there were a lot of walkouts in like Hollywood, probably because it was too close to the bone. People couldn't handle it.
Oh.
So what we might find is absurd comedy, if you're out in L.A., right?
You've been through a couple divorces.
Yeah, these expensive ones. Well, apparently a lot of the interplay between Scarlett Johansson and Laura Dern came from the fact that they both knew the same – they had the same divorce lawyer for one of their divorces.
Oh.
And they know this character and they worked out a lot of stuff. And remember, you know, they do have some history. I think it's a script, yes, but there was a lot of rehearsal and a lot of working through and bringing some real stuff into it.
Okay, that's cool. I mean,
I also like the way think about Scarlett Johansson. All we've seen of her in the last several years is her in a Marvel getup and green screen. And she goes raw in this movie, like very little makeup.
Yeah.
And the way that the camera photographs her face, we get to see this person who we've grown up watching her since she was like 12 years old.
Yeah, so
there's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on, but again, it's very hard for me to criticize this movie.
Well, you have to criticize. I mean, you know.
Well, no, but the thing is,
you want to criticize this movie.
Well, no, it's because I didn't love it.
But why do you have to love it? I mean, that's what I find fascinating, is that you feel like, oh, it came out at the end of the year on Netflix and it's getting all the reviews. I've got to love it. And if I don't love it, I must be a bad person.
Something's wrong with me if I don't love a movie that has a 94 on Metacritic. I feel like, you know, I'm missing something that everyone else is tapped into here.
But see, this is where, again, when you look at films about the emotional response versus, you know, the intellectual, and do you see what the film's doing? And maybe that's why you have to see it again to kind of break down and say, okay, I'm not going to get it feel-wise, but let's see what he was doing.
I get it intellectually, and I appreciate the film. It's a good film, but it's totally personal thing. It just didn't grab me.
You have some experience with divorce, and I don't, but the question is, I mean, did that bother you that you may not have had that same experience?
No, not at all. And there was enough of the experience that I could relate to I've definitely been through bad breakups and all that kind of stuff and been through this kind of stuff in my life. And I could relate to it. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is, but it just, I was not torn apart by this movie.
Yeah, and I wasn't torn up. I'm okay now.
right.
I mean, but we just had a lengthy discussion, my wife and I, after the movie was over. It wasn't like we could just fall asleep. I mean, I was wide awake through this movie. And, you know, it was a little touching for me. Like the end with them each doing sort of their own Sondheim song, and one was the joy and one was more melancholy. I thought there was a lot of emotion in Adam Driver's performance and Scarlett Johansson's. I mean, they both deserve to be nominated for Academy Awards, in my opinion. I'm going to go no further than that, but I just thought they were fantastic performances. And I wish that the way that the Oscars used to work with like supporting actors, you could get somebody that did like a pretty small role.
Right.
I thought Alan Alda
was fantastic.
I just loved – I mean, you know, he's been very sick. And he's getting up there and he does his performance. And, you know, there was a lot of wisdom in what he was saying. And again, I did think of him like as the doctor in Catch-22. Yes. It was very funny, but it was funny in the sad way that it's just was so true. Everything the guy said was like textbook true in this story.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he clearly was coming from a place of experience, which I liked as, you know, here's this old guy talking to the young people.
I mean, but, you know, just – and again, it was funny in a sad way, but when you'd hear like these lawyer rates and stuff and the retainer fees, it makes your head spin.
It does make your head spin. Yeah. I mean, I like that they addressed the issue of money so much throughout the film, and his relationship with money was very interesting.
Yeah. Well, and also I think some people, you know, again, I'm speaking to the trolls out there, you know, they talk about like watching like rich people, you know, fighting a divorce. But see, just because they were in entertainment, they weren't. Yeah. And sure, maybe they're, you know, they have more money than, you know, the regular working collar person. They weren't that wealthy. And this divorce was certainly putting them behind. And I think that's what's so interesting is that they – when you build a life with somebody, that's why sometimes people stay. And I think that was like the Adam Driver. It was like, well, I've got this life that I've built. And he never really reflected. And she even said like – even with her conversations with Laura Dern, there was just like a couple of moments that if he had just said one different thing, it could have been different. But because he didn't say those things, it just validated what the problem was.
Yeah, which is that he's essentially selfish.
Yeah, and then I think it's hard, right? And this is why I think this is a complicated movie that's not as cliched and as easy as you might think, is that the easy route would be to show him be selfish. But the way that his character, he seems like a great guy, right? Like her family loves him.
Oh, yeah. They
and that
totally
scene,
do.
I mean, again, comedy. I love Merritt Weaver. And when she has to serve him papers.
Oh, that was a great scene. Yeah.
Like,
oh,
it's
and
so
also,
good.
Also, it's really nice to see Julie Haggerty.
Yes, but what's really weird is like not moments before, we just had watched her in something else, and it was the ultimate. It was like the ultimate plate of shrimp. It's like Julie Haggerty is showing up everywhere, man.
So yeah, I mean, I enjoyed the movie. It's not going on my top 10 list.
Okay, well, I'm not going to force you to put it something that you don't like on your top 10 list. However, I will tell you, it maybe is a thing. Again, you're like, you have all the time in the world, but yeah. I had time to watch 3.5 hours of The Irishman again. Where The Irishman sits in my top 10 list is different having seen it a second time than if I'd only seen it the once.
Right.
And where Once Upon a Time in Hollywood sits in my top 10 list greatly changes based on my reflection on and your, seeing it a second time.
Yeah. That's interesting. Well, the way I do a top 10 list is all 10 are equal. I don't rank them within the 10.
I kind of do if I get that far. Like in recent years, I mean, once you have kids and you just can't get out and then you live in a place with theaters, it takes so long to get to a top 10. But I think this year, as we've said, I think we're going to get there a lot earlier and we can reveal it because I've seen a bunch of the films that all the critics are going gaga over.
Right, yeah.
And there's just a few out there that I haven't.
I will not be able to see The Lighthouse.
Well, maybe when it streams, you can.
Well, yeah, no, but I mean, like, I'm not going to be able to see it in the theaters.
Well, I mean, there's some ones it's a busy time. I mean, I haven't gotten to see that Mr. Rogers thing yet. And now Knives Out, I'm hearing all these year-end things about that. So I kind of want to see that. And, Uncut Gems, I do want to see. And what else is out there that's kicking around? I guess the Two Popes. I saw the preview for that on Netflix. Okay.
I do not want to see the Mr. Rogers movie.
You... Well, you didn't grow up with TV.
So I did. I grew up with Mr. Rogers.
Well, maybe he haunted you. I got to be honest, though. I never really liked Mr. Rogers as a kid. Like, I thought he was boring, you know? He was a nice guy, but he was boring as a kid.
I did like it, but it's just another biopic, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I really liked the director. She did the movie Can You Ever Forgive Me? And she also did Diary of a Teenage Girl. So I want to give her the benefit of the doubt. I just don't know if I'm going to get to the theater. Like you said, it looks and you're like, do I have to see that in the theater? Probably not.
No, I'll probably watch it eventually. It's not like I'm anti this movie, but it's definitely not something I'm going to make an effort to get to the theater and see.
Yeah. Well, if I do see it, I'll tell you about it. But what else is out there? Because I'm trying to think. Well, okay. City of God is one of my favorite movies of the last 15, 16 years. And that director has directed The Two Popes.
Yes.
And of course, you know, you see it, it's Netflix. It feels like it's going to be this very tiny little like made-for-TV movie. But then I see the preview and I'm like, oh no, this looks like a full-blown, beautifully shot epic.
Right.
With great performances and a little drama. And I kind of want to see this now. And it's going to be on Netflix so I can see it.
What about, speaking of upcoming movies, what about this 1917 movie?
Oh, well, yeah, okay. And there's a half, my son wants to watch that. Like, so we're going to see that in the theater, and I got to make it a good one. But that's a can't miss. I mean, I got to see it for the cinematography or the one-shot thing, and in fact, it's World War I, and I like these war epics. So I'm in on that, and we'll definitely not miss that.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Star Wars. We already have our tickets. We're going to see that in next weekend.
Oh, boy. I don't know. I guess I'm going to have to see that.
You're going to have to see that. Come on. It was funny now that I guess we didn't talk about this. See, we always have tough to talk about. We're going to wrap up on this special episode very shortly. But, we had to get new phones. And so we got new iPhones and they gave us a free year of the Disney Plus, right? So we got the Disney Plus after I said I wasn't going to get it, right?
Right.
A couple things. My son, because he's got this phone and he now has the Disney Plus, he's like rewatching all the Star Wars movies. And he's like, Dad, you're right. Phantom Menace is horrible. Oh, man, that two clones is even worse. You know, I'm like, oh, so you watch? He's like, yeah, I watched them all. Like, so he, this is what he's doing. He's watching these, which I think is kind of cool. He's got the power of watching what he wants to watch. And me, I watched, rewatched Candleshoe, you know?
Oh, nice. Okay. You know,
well, the prints that they have on here, man, they're beautiful.
Oh,
not a scratch on them.
They've done restoration and stuff.
Yeah, oh, yeah. They even have this film that I was always talking about, but like I don't think people believe me, and I almost feel like a fever dream myself that I ever saw this thing called Treasure of Matagumbe. It's on there, and it looks amazing. Wow. Yeah, it's a crappy movie, but it's on there. And then, of course, I've gotten to watch. I've seen the first four episodes. I'm one episode behind on The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a family event. The kids love it.
Really?
My wife loves it. It's all about the Baby Yoda. That thing is awesome. Okay. You literally, when he's on, you're like, well, it could be a she. We don't know. It goes, right. you go, oh, look at the Baby Yoda. So cute. It's a genius marketing move because the rest of it is like, it's pretty crappy, you know, almost like Xena, the warrior to okay. TV, but with like better production values. And apparently, I was reading about this, they have this like, new sort of, it's beyond green screen technology. Uh-huh. It puts the actors, it's all like on a sound stage, but it's like these virtual 3D backdrops and the cameras move around it. And so you're walking in space where you're actually not just like looking at green screens. You're looking at stuff to your own eye, looks like vistas and other stuff. And so it gives the actors more to go on.
Fascinating. Wow.
And so, you know, you watch this and sure, you know, it has a look that's like, it looks better than your typical TV, but it looks like, well, there's some special effects involved.
Right.
And it's, you know, this is how they're filming it. It's that most of it isn't even, it makes it feel like it's on location, but there's no location.
Now, does the Mandalorian ever take his helmet off?
No, but see, if you go beyond the first half of the episode that you watched, it's all explained. There's a whole mythology going on. There's more Mandalorians. It's all a whole thing, and it's their whole, like, it's like kind of their religion, and it's about not taking your mask off. And in doing so, you can't, well, you can take it off in private.
But Sabine takes her mask off.
Which one is Sabine?
From Star Wars Rebels.
Well, I don't know what Sabine's issue is, man, but it may have been something that happened after the fact. I think it had something to do with maybe the time of like the Empire and everything. But, you know, again, I've only four episodes in, but it's junk and there's some really bad dialogue. It's like, you know, it's pretty standard, really. But it's still a guilty pleasure and, you know, and we're enjoying it. And again, it's just we could actually all four of us watch it, which doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, that doesn't happen very often. Well, that's the whole point of Disney Plus is that it's...
You sit down with your daughters and you watch an episode. When that Baby Yoda comes on, it's game over. All right? You're going to be game over. We're all going to be game over because it's undeniable. Even that troll that likes to troll us over like Marriage Story and the Irishman, he may not like Baby Yoda or he may not admit to it. But I am a big enough man to admit that Baby Yoda melts my heart. I want the Baby Yoda underwear and the sheets. And the sweater.
Maybe they should have replaced the kid in Marriage Story with a Baby Yoda.
Well, you know, here's a weird thing, right? That kid looks almost identical to Danny from The Shining.
You're right.
I kept on a couple of times during the movie. I was going,
Red Rum.
I was going, what is it, Mrs. Torrance? And the first time I did it, I didn't tell my wife that I was going to say that. She's like, oh, my God, he does look like Danny. And I don't usually like the kid actors in movies. So that's my own thing I had to get over. But I didn't really enjoy his performance very much. He was my least favorite part of the movie, but I didn't love it. I loved the movie.
Okay, I'm glad you loved the movie.
I'm not telling you whether it's going to be on my top 10. I haven't seen all the movies yet. Will it fit in? But I think it's probably going to be there.
Okay.
But I just don't know where yet.
I look forward to finding out.
I mean, it's also another thing too, is that just because a movie has like the super top-notch performances, right? Maybe those will be the best performances or are my top 10 performances. They may have been better than the movie. I mean, maybe the part is that you're having a struggle with is that you didn't like the screenplay as much and you didn't like the direction as much.
That's pretty much it, yeah.
Yeah, where I thought the direction was pretty strong. And the screenplay, you know, I liked, but there was issues. I mean, it's certainly not my number one screenplay of the year.
Definitely not, yeah, for me.
You know, but again, I think you're picking it apart because it is a good movie. If it was a terrible movie, it wouldn't be worth your time.
Oh, you're absolutely right. No, it is a good movie. I'm not denying that.
I had a better time watching Marriage Story than I did the Avengers final piece of the puzzle. Endgame. Well, that's it. That was one of my least favorite experiences.
But I can't even make that comparison, though.
Well, I don't know. You know who could? the troll. Yes, that's what I'm just going to refer to him now. You know who he is. I know who he is. We love him.
He might be coming on the show.
Maybe, yeah, if he dares. I know he should have come on this episode. It would have been pretty funny.
Well, he is a film score fanatic.
Oh, is he now?
Yes.
I'd love to talk to him about that because the state of film scores has definitely been sad. I just haven't felt like I have like a – Like even the Marriage Story, I couldn't go hum it for you. You know, and the Joker is probably, I think, the best score that I heard this year, but I still couldn't tell you too much about it. I mean,
he was telling me that one of his favorite scores from this year is from a movie that he hated.
Which is that?
Midsommar.
Oh, Midsommar's score was amazing. Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, so, and that's another thing is that it's a shame is that, oh God, we're running out of time. Again, look, we thought we were going to talk about 20 minutes is that the other controversy that's going on is we've had the Golden Globes come out.
Right.
And people are all up in arms because there was no females nominated for Best Director. And, you know, okay. And that's a whole debate we could get into. But you have to just be honest and say, if you look at the five films that are your favorite, well, are one of those from a female director? It certainly can't be all five that you keep throwing. They're throwing in names in the conversation of movies that weren't. I mean, if you really thought Hustlers was one of the top five films of the year, then you vote for her for best director. But otherwise, then you're being silly. And maybe the only person out of the ones that they're throwing out in the conversation that might really be worth consideration would be the director of The Farewell. But I would argue that the direction is probably the least successful thing about it, even though it was great direction
right.
as well. But
what about Little Women?
Okay, well, that's another thing is, right, they're like all going, you know, like, where's Greta Gerwig? But here's the question. Does this mean that from now on, every time Greta Gerwig makes a movie, that she has to be in the conversation for best director?
The movie is very well reviewed, though.
Well, okay, but you know what? In 1994, the last big screen adaptation of Little Woman was well, and that was that's an Australian film director, and that's a woman, but there was no conversation about why she wasn't nominated, because it's the Little Women. There's like 12 versions of it. So like, I think that's what goes against it more than anything. And I haven't seen the movie. I do want to see it, and film.
I'm just pointing it out as a movie that's getting good reviews and is directed by a woman. And
Right, but if we start saying, well, we're going to have to carve out one spot every year for one particular category or something, then that, I mean, again, I guess you could do that, but I just think that, you know, yes, when you have a year where several movies that are good quality that were made by female directors, then I guess that's sort of a conversation. But at the same time, you know, a big competitive year, and you'll have to say, is Little Women better than A, B, C, D, E, F? And I won't know until I see what the nominees turn out to be. And then we can have that debate, because I'm sure if there are no women nominated for Best Director this year,
we will be having that debate.
People are going to be up in arms.
Yeah, they will be.
Oscar's so male.
Oh, man. Okay.
So get ready.
Okay, we should wrap it up.
Oh, yes, we should.
Yeah.
Well, see, we got an episode in and we didn't even know we're going to do it. Woohoo! Yeah. All right. Well, gang, I hope you enjoyed. This is probably the closest we've ever gotten to an argument, and it really wasn't an argument at all. So.
Yeah. So, but anyhow, watch Marriage Story and make up your own mind. It's a good movie.
Oh, see? The final, he says it's a good movie. Not
oh,
in
no,
his top
I, no,
10,
I said
but
it was
it's a good movie.
I said it was a good movie from the beginning. It just didn't, engage me.
Hey, the fact that you saw an Adam Driver movie and you gave it a good review, that's enough for me.
Not only that, I think he was good in it. I think it was a good performance.
Next thing you know, you'll be watching The Report.
What's that?
That's another big movie that Amazon has, and it's actually up on there right now.
That's right. Yes, I saw that. But it's not getting much notice, is it?
Well, yeah, they didn't do the hype the right way. Netflix does the hype better than Amazon, and Amazon put theirs in theaters, and it kind of got just, you know, pushed aside. So they really maybe, and of course now they're doing this thing where they're realizing that, wait a minute, we don't have to wait a few months. We'll just put it in for a few weeks, just like Netflix.
Just like Netflix.
They're catching up. They have a better film logo, but they don't have the rest of it.
Oh, man. Okay, until next time.
Yeah, goodbye.
Bye.